Can we start?
Yes.
All right, so good morning and welcome to today's session. My name is Leonie Hoxha. I'm a senior network consultant working for Cisco Systems for about 7 years now. Today's session will be about segment routing. Now, I believe that some of you, if not most of you, already have segment routing implemented in your networks. If not, then that's a good session for you, maybe. To look at the benefits of it and how you can implement it in your networks. So if you think about it, segment routing is not really something new, but technically it runs on top of MPLS, okay? But before we go there, let's see the agenda. First, we'll look at the challenges that we are facing today with the current MPLS networks, right? Then we will move on with the segment routing overview and the building blocks. So we will see exactly what are the components that make up segment routing. In this case, that's the prefix seed and adjacency seed. There is more than that, but these are just the basic blocks. And then we will move on with the TI-LFA or topology independent LFA. So TI-LFA is a protection mechanism, meaning that in case of a link failure or a node failure, we will see how it can overcome that problem and how you can reroute the traffic without any problem. And then we will look at segment routing traffic engineering, specifically together with the PC controller. And then last but not least, we'll check at some of the use cases. We'll see exactly how does segment routing fit to today's world and how you can leverage it. Specifically, we will look at Flex Algo, SD-WAN over segment routing, disjointness paths with SRPCE, as well as inter-AS communication. So if you have two different BGP ASs and you would like to talk, you have services running from one AS to another AS, you will see how we can do that with the BGP peering seat. So we said we'll look at the challenges today, right? So imagine if you look at the picture now, imagine you have a core network that runs MPLS as an underlay and layer three VPNs, so MPBGP as an overlay, right? And then on the left side, you have a metro Ethernet network that uses Ethernet as an underlay and layer two VPNs, VPLS or pseudo-wise, whatever, as an overlay. And then on the right-hand side, you have a data center, which is actually where you offer the services for your customers, where you use IP as an underlay and VXLAN as an overlay. So what that means, so you're splitting your network basically in three different parts or three different domains. And obviously, it seems that also you might have different people taking care of different parts of the network, which is okay. However, this is also a challenge because the end user, which is on the left-hand side, needs a service from your data center, right? Now, the packet will move from one domain to another, and to another one, which means there will be always some sort of encapsulation, decapsulation, right? And between the domains, you will have some sort of stitching, right? Because you need to make layer 2 VPN talk to layer 3 VPN and then talk to VXLAN and vice versa, right? So it's quite complex if you think of end-to-end service provisioning. And at the end of the day, this is all manual process today, at least. With segment routing, what we think is a sort of a unified fabric for all the service creation. Now, what that means is, if you look back at the picture before, we said we have the metro, the core, and the data center. We still have the same, but instead of using all these three different underlay protocols, you can use only one, which is segment routing. Now, if you run segment routing all the way from the access to your aggregation to the core and to the data center, you can think about it that it's just one protocol that you need to manage in cases you have any issues. If you want to troubleshoot the network, then you don't need to know all the different underlay protocols. But if you know segment routing, that's the best way to do it. Now, that's not the only reason, of course. On top of segment routing, you can run now, instead of those different overlays, you can run eVPN as an example, right? You can have layer 2 VPNs, layer 3 VPNs on top of that running. Now, what do we eliminate with segment routing comparing to what we do today? So on the left-hand side, you have unified MPLS. With unified MPLS, you have two parts, right? You have the transport and you have the services part, meaning you run different protocols. In the transport, of course, you will always use IP for the connectivity, which is the same case with SR. You will use one of the IGPs, either OSPF or ISIS, MPLS LDP to distribute the labels. And then on top, you might use also RSVPTE if you do some sort of traffic engineering, bandwidth reservation, or fast reroute. And in some cases, also BGP-LU. Now, BGP-LU is basically RFC 3107, which you will usually use with inter-AS options, right? That's the transport part. Now, the services part, you'll usually use BGP, of course. And at some points, also target LDP session in case you have some sort of, let's say, pseudo-wire, so point-to-point layer 2 VPN connections. Now, with segment routing on the right side, you eliminate MPLS LDP, you eliminate RSVPTE, you eliminate BGP-LU. So basically what you have is only IP for the connectivity itself. You have one IGP, either ISIS or OSPF, and slash SR. What does that mean? Now, that means that segment routing is not an additional protocol, but it is just one of the IGPs with additional headers, right? Now, in case of ISIS, that would be some additional TLVs, and in case of OSPF, that's additional LSA types. So imagine when the OSPF or ISIS comes up, you are forming those neighborships, right? So point-to-point neighborship between routers. And you are exchanging the prefixes now, meaning you are exchanging the link state database between the devices, right? Now, with that link state database, segment routing labels are also exchanged on top, right? So now you don't need to activate LDP as an additional protocol to distribute the labels, but the IGP itself will do the same, right? And then on top, of course, for the services parts, again, you eliminate LDP or RSVP, but you can use MPBGP or EVPN in that case. So that's the simplification of SR. Now, let's see exactly at the building blocks of SR and how it works. We said that SR is not something new, right? But technically, it is something new. Why? Because SR is based on source routing. What does that mean? Today, if you need to reach a destination, the routing is based on destination route. It's destination-based routing, okay? So each and every router or each and every hop will decide how to route the traffic to the destination. With SR, that's the difference now because the source itself chooses the path, okay? So what that means is just the source encodes in the packet header a list of labels, okay? So it's an ordered list of segments. So what is a segment then? Well, a segment is an identifier for any type of instruction. Okay, so what is an instruction now? An instruction can mean a lot of things. In our example, it will say, okay, go to node N using the shortest path. So node A needs to reach node N at the destination. Reaching the, using the shortest path, meaning based on OSPF or ISIS best path. Now, with SR, you can do still dynamic calculation of the path, or you can still do the explicit path traffic forwarding. Now, from data plane perspective, as I said, segment routing is new in the control plane, right? In the data plane, you still use MPLS or IPv6 for the forwarding, okay? So in the control plane now, be it ISIS or OSPF, What they did is they just added some extensions on the protocol itself to carry on the segment routing labels or the segment IDs. For the path options, as I said before, you still have the same option either dynamically or explicitly. We mentioned segment IDs, right, are distributed by the IGP itself. Now, what are some of the segment IDs possible or available? The IGP-based segment IDs are prefix segment ID, or node seed or anycast seed, and adjacency segment ID. Now, if you look at the topology, we have three routers, right? A, B, and C. So the prefix segment ID is something that identifies the router itself. Imagine it as a loopback interface where you have an IP address that identifies that node in your network domain, right? So in that case, you will assign a prefix segment ID, meaning a label, for that loopback interface. And this label now, or that SID, is unique, or it should be unique, actually. When I say unique, it means it is globally significant. What does that mean? Now, imagine you have OSPF process 1 running, right? In that OSPF process 1, whatever router is participating in that process, he will know all the prefixes, he will know all the loopback interface IP addresses and everything. And on top of that, he will also know the prefix segment ID of that specific node, right? So each node will have a unique value. In this case, node A has 16,001, node B at 16,002, and node C has 16,003. So in that case, logically, if you think, if you want to push some traffic from node A to node C, and you want to say, do not go directly, but go through node B, you can use prefix segment of node B. So in that case, it will say go to 16,002, and then go to 16,003, right? So this is a basic explanation of prefix segment ID. Now the adjacency segment ID, it's the second type of segment ID in segment routing world. It basically identifies the node's physical links, okay? So prefix segment is only one per node. Adjacency segment is per node, per interface, or per link. So why do we need it? You will need it basically for traffic engineering, or you will need it with TILFA or fast reroute, okay? Now, adjacency segment ID is not globally significant, but it is locally significant. What does that mean? That means that node A might assign to one of the links 24,001, and node B might assign the same value for its link. Okay? That's why it's locally significant. It means you can have the same values on different nodes for the adjacency segment ID. But this is not the same case with prefix segment IDs, where it is a unique label value per node. Okay? And here we have a better explanation with some clearer picture. So prefix segment ID, if you look at the top right picture up there, you have a source as node 1, and you have a destination node 5, okay? So node 1, when it's forwarding the packet towards node 5, obviously it will go through node 2 and node 5, of course, right? Now what that means is that on node 1, the label of the stack will have only one segment ID or label. So just to make it clear, a segment ID equals to a label is the same thing. So if you think about LDP, right, how you will do the same? In LDP, if you forward the traffic from node 1 to node 5, it doesn't necessarily mean that you will have the same labels all the way. Why? Because node 1 might assign a label, I don't know, label number 5 for node 5. Node 2 might assign label 6 for node 5, which means it's not unique. In our case, node 1 will assign, node 5 will assign 16,005, it will be distributed via ISIS, so everyone in the domain will know, okay, 16,005 belongs to node 5. Now, if I want to forward traffic to node 5, I will use segment ID of 16,005, okay? And the same goes for node 3. So if he wants to forward traffic or push traffic towards node 5 as a destination, he will still use the same segment ID. Now, prefix segment ID offers you the possibility to do some sort of ECMP forwarding. What is ECMP? It means equal cost multipath, which means if you have two different paths to reach a destination, but those two different paths have the same cost, then you can do some sort of load balancing. And that is possible if you use the prefix segment ID. So the label space, or what we call the sRGB in segment routing, so segment routing global block, it's a label space that starts from 16,000 to 23,999 for the prefix segment ID, or dynamically allocated labels. So what that means is once you enable segment routing on one of your router, the node will automatically assign default sRGB, which starts from 16,000, which means the devices will assign one of the labels starting from 16,000. The prefix segment IDs, as I said, those are statically assigned and distributed by the IGP, OSS or ISPF, OSPF or ISIS. The adjacent segment ID on the other side are dynamically assigned now, right? And as I said, so if you look at the topology, node 4, he has three different physical links, going to node 3, node 2, and node 5. Now, for each of those links, he will assign a different adjacency segment ID. I said before that the adjacency segment ID has local significance. What that means is 24042, as an example, which goes to adjacency node 2, will be significant only for node 4, but not for node 2. Okay? Even though it is advertised by ISS and OSPF, the adjacency segment ID is not really used until the point when you have TILFA enabled or you have some sort of traffic engineering running on your network. Now, you can use also combined SIDs, meaning you can combine prefix segment ID and you can also use adjacency segment at the same time. And that is actually the traffic engineering use case here. So you might say, okay, I have a source on node 1 and the destination is node 5, right? But I don't want to leave it up to the IGP to choose the path. I want to choose it myself, right? So you can do it in one way. So you create a label of the stack, right? So we have a packet to node 5, as you can see. Now, the first label, the bottommost label, is 24,045, which is the adjacency segment ID of node 4 to node 5, right? And the top label, the one in the green, is a prefix segment ID 16,004, which means node 1 says, okay, to go to node 5, first go to node 4 and use ECMP in this case, because you have two different paths, the same cost, so the packets will be load balanced until node 4, but from node 4, it will, so once it reaches node 4, it will pop the top label, 16,004, and we'll check what is the next label in the in the label stack. It is 24,045, which is the adjacency segment ID of the link on node 4 going to node 5. So we will know exactly now, okay, I need to push the traffic or the packet towards node 5. So this is the use case with combined SIDs. Now, topology independent LFA or TILFA. I mentioned before TILFA is used for traffic protection in case of node failure or a link failure. Now, TILFA is not also something new because we have in traditional MPLS world, we have a fast reroute with LFA, right? Remote LFA, direct LFA, and so on. But that didn't really guarantee you 100% of protection or coverage in case of failures. imagine you have a ring topology in the network. In the, for example, in the metro Ethernet network or in the access side, you have a ring. Now, TI-LFA will cover all sorts of failures, okay, in under 50 milliseconds. Now, what I mean with the coverage, it's like you use BFD for detecting a failure, but then TI-LFA in the background will choose a post-convergence path. Now, what is a post-convergence path? A post-convergence path means, for example, a node will calculate, okay, what happens if my primary link fails? How can I reach a destination without creating any loops in the network, okay? This is called the post-convergence. So even when there is a failure happening, the node will exactly know how to reach a destination via backup path without waiting for the convergence of the IGP protocol, all right? And this is a simple example in here. So imagine you have a packet going from node A to node Z, right? The link between router 1 and router 2 in here has failed. And this was used as a primary link to go to node Z as a destination. So what happens is now, of course, node 1 will detect that, okay, I have a link failure, right? I'm using TI-LFA. Now, how can I reach a destination without waiting for the convergence to happen and then installing the new backup path and then pushing the traffic, okay? So he will calculate the post-convergence path and he will say, okay, from node 1, it will assign a couple of prefixes and adjacency segment IDs. So it will create a label stack. So on top of the packet to the destination, the payload, it will say, okay, you have three labels now, all right? So the topmost label is prefixed out of router R4 in this case, okay? Now, R1 will say, okay, push the traffic towards router 4. Now, once the packet reaches router 4, router 4 will see, okay, what is the next label in the label stack? It will see, okay, this is an adjacency segment ID of my link going towards router 3. Now, why do we use adjacency segment ID in this case? We can say, okay, why don't you use the prefix segment ID? Well, because router 4 will check, okay, to reach router 3, I have a metric of 1,000, so a cost of 1,000. So what it means is for him, because you can see the default metric or the default cost on all the links is 10. Now, for router 4 to reach router 3 with a prefix segment ID, he will not go directly because he has a cost of 1,000, but he will go all the way up to router 1. Now, in order to enforce router 4 to go to router 3 through the directly connected link, you will have to use the adjacency segment ID, okay? Because the adjacency segment ID, as we said, is per node per link. That's why you say router 4, use that directly connected link to router 3 and push the traffic towards router 3, okay? Now, once the packet arrives at router 3, it will see, okay, what is the next label in the stack? Or what is the next SID? We'll see, okay, the next SID is the prefix SID of node Z, which is a destination. Now, router 3, of course, he will calculate what is the best path to reach router Z. In that case, if the cost is 10 on all the links apart from the link between R4 and R3, he will just forward it towards node 2 as the next stop, and then it will reach the destination. So this is a very good example on how TI-LFA can cover each and every scenarios in case of a link or node failure. In our example, this is a link failure, but it's more or less the same for the node failure. Segment routing, traffic engineering. So the traditional MPLS RSVPTE, right? You have the head end, you have the tail end, you have the midpoints. You created tunnels, right? So the tunnel had to be signaled all the way, which means yeah, if you have the tunnel, all the routers between the head end and the tail end needed to be signaled and had to keep a state of the tunnel, right? Now that changes with SRTE. because there is no state at all at the midpoint routers. The state is being kept only at the head end. Okay. Now, we mentioned prefix seed and adjacency seeds. In SRTE, there's a binding seed. So a binding seed is just an identifier of the SRTE tunnel. But we don't call it SRTE tunnel. We call it an SR policy. And that's basically based on the standards and the RFCs. Okay? Because it has also a different way of working. It's not the same as a tunnel. So a binding seed identifies an SR policy. In our example, the source is node 1. The destination is, for example, node 3 on the right side. You say, okay, if a packet comes with a binding seed, so the top label is a binding seed of 24008, it identifies an SR policy, and I know how to treat that packet based on the behavior, based on the binding seed, actually. And I know how the routers on the way know how to behave in case of in that case. So SRPC, what is an SRPC? SRPC is just a controller that basically does the calculation of the path. So instead of the head end to do it, you can use a controller on top and do all the calculations, right? SRPC uses the PSEP protocol, which is not something new. So what happens is, if a PCC, in that case, a head end, calculates or needs to reach a destination, he will ask the SRPC, okay, can you please calculate for me a path how to reach a destination? And the SRPC will push down that instruction with the PSEP protocol. Okay, it will say, okay, to reach a destination, please use those sort of labels. And the SRPC keeps the LSP database and traffic engineering database. LSP database means ISS or OSPF databases. Now, how does SRPC know all the, let's say, OSPF or ISS database? It knows it basically with the BGP-LS, right? So one of the routers in your domain has to speak with BGP link state protocol with the controller so that the controller is being fed with the, all the informations of the ISS or OSPF database, which means he has the visibility of all the different domains. So some of the use cases with SR, I've put some of them, such as Flex Algo, which is something new, SD-WAN over segment routing, disjointness, and inter-AS. So what is Flex Algo? Obviously, whoever he is from the service provider world, you know that usually you have dual-plane topologies in your network, right? For primary and backup purposes, or even for active-active forwarding. Now, Flex Algo gives you that opportunity, meaning that, for example, you have the nodes on the upper side, which are in the green, and the nodes in the red, right? So dual plane. So you can say, okay, all the nodes in the green will have a flex algo of 128. 128 is just a value that you assign to those devices with a prefix seed on top of that. And then the devices on the red side, downside and the bottom, will have a flex algo of 129. Now, whenever you push traffic from 0 to 9, from source to the destination, instead of giving all the prefix segment IDs, you say, okay, just follow flex algo 128, right? Because everyone in the network knows what flex algo 128 means. They know how to behave with that traffic, with that packet. This is an example where you use flex algo 0, which is a default one, meaning you use ECMP. This is the example with flex algo 128, right? You have a top label with 16,809, which identifies the flex algo 128, and all the devices on the way in the path, they know how to treat that packet. And the same happens for flex algo 129. So all the packets, all the nodes in the path, they know how to treat the packet based on the value numbers that they received. Now the other use case with the SD-WAN over segment routing, basically what it means is you can have a SD-WAN device on the edge assigning a DHCP value for example, voice application, so that the service provider will know how to treat that voice packet based on the DHCP. So you assign the SD-WAN, you say, okay, the outer tag is DHCP, for example, 46, And the PE device on the service provider side will say, okay, I received a packet with DHCP value 46, so I know that this is a voice application traffic, and I will use, let's say, the low delay path. The disjoint with SRPCE, this is another example where you can use different PE nodes or different ingress PEs to use different paths on the way, okay? So you might say, okay, customer A will go through path one and customer B will go through path B, so they will not boom into each other, okay? And the last use case is the inter AS with SRPC and BGP peering seat. So you have AS1 and you have AS6 on the right side. Now, how do you make them talk to each other? Before you had to use BGP LU, with SR you use the BGP peering seat now. It's the same use case as BGP LU. So you assign to node 2 towards node 4 a BGP peering seat of, in our case, 30,024. And what happens is you have an end-to-end path from source is on AS1 and destination is AS6. You create the label stack. You say, okay, 16,002 is a prefix seed of node 2, which is my egress device on AS1. And now to reach at another AS, you use the BGP peering seed of 300,000 of 24. And then once the packet reaches node 4 on AS6, then it will use the next label in the stack, which is 18,006, the prefix seed of node 6. So to conclude it, it has a strong customer adoption. So segment routing has been implemented with many, many customers in Germany, in Europe, and around the world. It has also an RFC 8402, which is an ITEF standard. And the best part is that it has a multi-vendor consensus. So it's not only Cisco or any other vendor, but it's most of the vendors have already implemented it. And so I would like to thank you all of that. Any questions there?